Well, good evening. That was incredible chanting we just did. Sounded really good. It's been on my mind because I've just copied some words that Koban said about chanting that I want to share with you as part of this evening's talk about are doing this service, this very, very simple service. And I think the more we're coordinated with it, the more meaningful it can be, including the actual noise that we make. In every religion that I know of, whether it's a so-called primitive, which isn't primitive at all, but what we call primitive people and the most sophisticated, everyone has some version of noise, music, chanting, singing, chorales, something. It's not the same part of the brain that we use with speaking. So there's something about some kind of liberation that happens with song and chanting for us as human beings. So wherever we go, whether we're chanting and dancing in the depths of Africa or up among the Ainu or in the Eskimos, everyone has music. I think Zen has the least musical music of most of them. At least Japanese Zen is chanted mostly in a very direct, all in the same tone and all at the same time. So it's Avalokiteshvara. If we did it with the drum, which they do at Zen Center, then every single word has the same pressure and the same expression. We give it some kind of musical expression, which sounds, I think, rather nice. In Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, in the wonderful Vietnamese tradition, they have a beautiful singing song of the Heart Sutra. Truly beautiful sound. I've often thought we should learn that because it's so pretty. And it's the same information, you could say, but we're not chanting it for information so much. That's a part of it, of course, and of course we study it deeply. But when we have a service like this, we're actually offering the merit of our life and our practice in this way. So there's some things that we're not all doing the same, and I thought it would be helpful if we could sort of clear it up as we talk about this. I don't know that we should go through it again or just talk about how we I'll take this off and go to the mat and just talk it through a little bit. You don't have to stand up, but I can find a basho. And the very first thing we do, because this is here, not a sesshin, is do three prostrations with the bell. And then bow all together. And we hold our hands in front of us and in front of just about our nose. So it's not down here and it's not up here. It's just right in front so we can see. And our eyes are cast down so we're not looking around. And we're hearing the other ones around us so that it's not just your own voice that you're hearing, but all the voices coming together. That way it becomes melded in a kind of medley. It's very much together. So after that little bow, then the Doan announces the sutra, Prajnaparamita Sutra, and then rings the bell and goes clunk. You ring the bell and announce it and then go clunk.
Clunk first.
Clunk first and then the bell. And then we chant. The bells in the middle of the chanting are for me. If this were Sesshin, then it would mean when the first bell rings, it's the Prajnaparamita. And then, if there were a real altar here, I would go up and offer some more incense, like this. And then at the second Prajnaparamita, when it's chanted, then I bow on the bell. So there are two bells in the middle, and since we're not doing this, then they just are in there for practice. And then at the end, the gate, gate. Oh, let's see, there's one more thing about the beginning. That I'm in gassho at the very beginning, but nobody else is. And when the first bell rings, that's for me to put my hands down. So I begin this way, but everybody else begins this way. That makes sense? I mean, it doesn't make sense, it's just arbitrary, but that's how we do it. So you all start this way, and I start this way until the bell goes, and I'm down like this. And then after our three bows, then we get the offer of merit. May the merit of this sutra extend to all things and all places. And we still keep our hands like this until we chant all Buddhas in 10 directions. Past, present, and future. And those bells are for me to go up to the altar and offer more incense so that when I come back around, then we can do three more bells. And after those bows, I'm in gassho, and so are you. You wait like this, and I step back and bow to the Buddha, or to Manjushri, because I'm in the straight line bit. But you just wait until the bell rings. And then we all bow together, you all to the altar, and me too. So if you're at another angle, you turn and face the altar and bow, and we all bow together. And then I go to my chair, and bow to the chair while you all bow to each other. So that's a kind of fellowship kind of bow, when everybody bows together. So you stand back in your regular place and then bow to each other like this. And then when I turn around, we put our hands back in shashu and bow like this, all together completely. It's, as I say, it's arbitrary, but it helps to know. I remember when I first did this service, I had no idea what I was doing. It took a long time to figure it out, much less to adapt to doing prostrations, which is troublesome for a lot of people who've never done anything like that before. I know in the Congregational Church in St. Louis, Missouri, we didn't do prostrations. So this was a whole new experience for me. and it took me quite a while to feel what it means. And then once I began to get it, I understood what Suzaki Roshi said often, or says often, that he is wearing a callus on his forehead because he feels he's prostrating so many times, and he feels he needs to do it. We
disappear on the ground, and then we stand up and carry on. Both ways. We go both ways. So are there questions about that? Samia?
It's not clear for me how we're facing with the bowing. There's a few frustrations at the beginning. Are we facing each other at the beginning?
For prostration, you're prostrating to the altar.
Always.
Yes.
And when do we face each other? There's one time where you turn around and face each other. That's just a regular bow in the end. Or are we always facing the altar?
No, just for the prostrations. And then you step back and you look at each other, or in your case, you're looking this way. And then at the end, when those three bows come, then you bow to the altar, then you bow to each other, and then we all bow together like this. So twice you put yourself in an angle if you're not directly looking at the altar at the beginning and at the end. Twice. Ellie?
So I believe that we stay in Gassho as you move to the altar and as you move back.
Yes. Yeah.
It's just that we don't bow that after you get there and you bow. Well, you bow when you, actually, I'm sorry, at the end.
At the end.
You bow and you don't bow.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I get a little extra bow in there. Yeah.
Also, the motions of the hands when you're prostrating, do they have a symbol or symbolism?
Oh, yes, they do. I'm glad you mentioned it. So you're tapping your forehead on the ground three times, it's supposed to be. And then you raise your hand. In some traditions, you raise your hand three times. In our tradition, it's just once. You don't flip it like that. You just raise it like this because Buddha is standing on your hands. Your own Buddha nature is being uplifted as you yourself are being disappearing in the ground. So it's a very metaphorical gesture, but when you're down there, you're blind, and you just lift up everything that's good about yourself up there, and then bring it down again, and stand up. So the standing up part is very important, because sometimes when things are tough, you feel like you could just stay down there forever. John?
At Shikoju, we used to, they don't do it anymore, but we always used to do nine bows.
Oh, yes.
Which I thought sounded right, and then they switched to the three bow thing, three bows in the beginning, and then three bows at the end. And I kind of thought, well, that's like,
yeah.
So was that originally a thing that Koban did?
No, that was what Suzuki Roshi did. Roshi decided that Americans, and he had the original hippie Americans to deal with, needed nine bows, at least nine bows. So he imposed it on everybody. And they still do it at Zen Center. They still do it at Arcata and at Berkeley. Most everybody who's connected with Zen Center in any way are doing nine bows still. It's a real aerobic exercise, especially for the priest who does some extra ones in there also. So it's nice. It's nice. But
when did you switch? Or did you not use
it? Koban switched us, I think. We did it in the beginning, but I think that was Koban's doing. He changed a number of things. He changed the wording of the Meal Sutra, for instance, just corrected some things that he thought needed it. He was one of the ones who translated our sutras with Richard Baker and Suzuki Roshi down at Tassajara in that first year when they were down there. And so what we ended up with was their work. And then over the years, Zen Center has completely rewritten it about a dozen times. So I can never follow along when it when we do the Zen Center way. But we're still doing it the original Koban way, except that we took out the he's. The Bodhisattva he, first time I became the director of Jikoji, that's the first thing I did was take out that he. But otherwise, it's original. Ron?
I like it because that was the way I learned it back in ancient, a long time ago, back at San Francisco.
Yes, yes.
Before they changed it so many times.
It's impossible.
I can't follow it either. I have to read it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I complained to Tiger. He was head for me, but where are we correct?
So there are lots of other chants that we do. Do you have copies?
I do.
Ellie just happens to have some copies.
Can I ask a quick question about the prostration? So when your head touches the ground, are you start with your forearms on the ground and then raise your hands up, or do your elbows just go straight to the...
No, your whole arm goes down.
And then?
And your hands. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So your face is on the ground, and your arms are on the ground, and the whole thing goes up.
Claire, I have a special one for you. If we need it tonight.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you. Oh, good. So the Dahi Shindarani is chanted especially at times of loss. Many, many people are chanting for the Japanese now, for the lost, the dead Japanese. They're chanting the Dahi Shindarani. It actually has a strange kind of story to it, a kind of meaning that nobody pays any attention to, because it's the sound of the words, the sound of the syllables that's important. And it's supposed in some traditions to have sort of magical properties. It probably has some powerful effect on our mind and our bodies as we chant. And it seems like we need to do that in times of real stress and danger or real sorrow and loss. In times of danger when somebody is dying but hasn't died yet, the Enmei Juku Kanon Gyo is usually chanted many times, 8 times, 10 times. It calls on Kanseon, who is Avalokiteshvara, saying, now I've forgotten exactly how it goes, but Avalokiteshvara is with us in the morning and also in the evening and all day long, and we can always depend on Avalokiteshvara to respond to us. So, that's a reminder to us that our life isn't a total disaster, that there's always refuge and there's always help. So it's a very wonderful thing to chant if you chant it with that understanding. And you chant it slowly at first. Kanze an namu butsu yu butsu u in yo butsu u. And then you go faster and faster until at the end you're going, Kanze an namu butsu yo butsu u in yo butsu u en bupo. So, you know, so it's a kind of challenge to stay focused, which is also very helpful. At Pureg, we chanted the Daihi Shindarani every day, as we did three services. In one of the services, we did the Daihi Shindarani. And you have to actually be very focused in order to keep up with it. And it's a wonderful practice. It keeps you wide awake, because there's no way you can do it unless you're wide awake. Do you have the drum with you?
Oh, you have it.
Oh, smart.
Well, maybe not.
Let's try it.
Well, and then I need to, could I borrow the gongs from you, the gongs?
There's another Dharani at the end called the, well, before the end, under the Enmei Juku Kanon Gyo, the Shosai Yokichi Yo Dharani, which is also a disaster preventing. And some people chant all of these things every day, every morning. At Hakubai Zendo in Boulder, they do it every single day. And it's refreshing. And they do nine bows at the beginning and nine at the end. So by the time you're done, you feel like you've really accomplished something and you can start the day. So...
Do you want to do the Daihi Shindarani?
Yes.
I think we should go pretty slow, because it's really hard when you haven't been doing this.
It is. It is. It is. Just do the best you can.
Daihi Shindarani
Namu Kala Tanno Tara Yaya Namu Omni Noryoki Chi Shifu Raya Fuji Sato Boya Moko Sato Boya Moko Ya Runikya Ya and Zaharaha Eshu Tanno Tansha Tamu Shiki Ni Toi Mo Oriya Boryoki Chi Shifu Ra Rinto Bo Namu Noro Gan Chikiri Moko Hodo Shami Sabo Oto Jo Shu Ben O Shu In Sabo Sato No Mo Bogya Moha Te Cho To Jito En O Buryoki Rugya Ti Kiara Chi Ikiri Moko Fuji Sato Sabo Sabo Mora Mora Moki Moki Rito In Kurio Kurio Ke Mo Torio Torio Hojaya Chi Moko Hojaya Chi Tora Tora Chirini Shifuraya Sharo Sharo Momo Hamora Ho Chiri Iki Iki Shino Shino Orasan Furashari Haza Hazan Furashaya Kurio Kurio Mora Kurio Kurio Kirisharo Haro Shiri Ri Shiri Ri Suryo Suryo Fujiya Fujiya Fudoya Fudoya Mi Chiriya Nora Kinji Chiri Shunino Hoyomo Mono Konoko Shido Ya Somoko Moko Shido Ya Somoko Shido Yuki Shifu Ga Ya Somoko Nora Kin Shinji, Somoko Mora Nora, Somoko Shirasu Omokyaya, Somoko Sobomoko Shidoya, Somoko Shakira Oshidoya, Somoko Hodomogya Shidoya, Somoko Nora Kinji Hagyaraya, Somoko Mohori Shingyaraya, Somoko Namu Karatan no Toraya, ya, Namu Oriya Boryo Kichi Shifuaya, Somoko Shiteto Modowa Hodoya, Somoko. Did you make it?
Kind of. Stumbling like many times.
Make it so you make it.
Yeah.
And that's like the rhythm, that's the speed.
That's the rhythm and the speed, yeah.
Does it speed up in this one?
No. Though it can. It depends on who's doing the drum. And it can be faster. If you're used to it, you can go faster.
Memorize it.
You know, even Hakubai Zenji hasn't memorized it. I think a lot of people have, but it's really hard. No, I can say that about the first four of them or so, but after that I just get lost in all those. There's so much alike. I think if you did it 10 times a day for a while, you'd get it. Did you ever learn it, Ellie?
I don't think I ever learned it by heart. I'm sure the Heart Sutra in Japanese, I mean, that's just...
Yes, yes, yes.
Not this one.
So that's the last one on our list here, which is no longer called the Heart Great Heart Perfect Wisdom Sutra, but the Makahanya Haramita Shingyo.
And what's the slant at the end? Does this stand for anything?
It's just an announcement and an embellishment. And somebody thought that was a good idea probably 1,000 years ago or so. And that's what we do.
Makahanya Haramita Shingyo
Kanji Zarbo Satsugyo Jinhanya Haramita Jisho Kengo On Kai Kudo Isai Ku Yakusha Rishi Shiki Fui Kuku Fui Shiki Shiki Sokuze Kuku Sokuze Shiki Ju Sogyo Shiki Yakubu Nyoze Shari Shize Shoho Kuso Fu Sho Fu Metsu Fu Ku Fu Jo Fu Zo Fu Genze Ko Ku Chu Mu Shiki Mu Ju So Gyo Shiki Mu Gen Ni Bi Zed Shin Ni Mu Shiki Shoko Mi Soku Ho Mu Gen Kai Nai Shi Mu I Shiki Kai Mu Mu Myo Yaku Mu Mu Myo Jin Nai Shi Mu Ro Shi Yaku Mu Ro Shi Jin Mu Ku Shu Metsu Do Mu Chi Yaku Mu Toku I Mu Sho Toko Bodai Sata E Hanya Haramita Ko Shin Mu Ke Ge Mu Ke Ge Ko Mu Uku Fu On Ri isaitendo muso kugyo ne hansan se sho butsu e hanyahara mita ko toku anokutara sanyaku sanbodai ko chi hanyahara mita zedai jinshu zedai myoshu zemu joshu zemu todo shu no Isai kushin jitsu fu koko setsu hanya hara mita shu soku setsu shu watsu gyate gyate hara gyate hara so gyate boji sowaka hanya shingyo. So here are Coben's words on chanting. You can pass around.
Is there no mukugyo with this one?
Usually there is, but not always. It's like the way we chant it in English. Sometimes it is and sometimes not. It's easy to do with it because all the syllables are the same.
You know, what's interesting is when we do a mukugyo or everything is very equally rhythmic,
yes,
we all start at a different pitch, so it creates this really great harmony.
Uh-huh.
But when we do it in English, you know, whoever starts the whatever you call it.
Yes.
And then we all come in with that one pitch. So it's almost, to me, it's less interesting, and I'm the one that kind of got rid of it. When I started doing Don, I asked you, why did we use the mukugyo? And then you said, because of the Japanese. I said, but we're doing it in English.
Yes.
You said, okay, fine, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
We quit doing it. And now it just hit me, it's so beautiful because we all come in at a different pitch.
The Don is supposed to create the pitch, and then we're all supposed to come in with that same pitch. And in Zen Center, they work real hard to create that. Yes. And we've never actually
tried
to do that very much. And sometimes, some people are harder, their voice is harder to come into tune with.
But when we do the Heart Sutra here, we'll mostly all about the same pitch. I mean, we could be,
yes,
an octave lower, but it's the same pitch.
Yes.
But when we did it now with this, to me it was really nice because it's creating this kind of dissonance.
Yes.
In the harmony.
Yeah, you're right.
So it's just an observation.
Oh, musicians, good mind, yeah. Well, we could switch back and forth. I've often thought we could do it sometimes in English and sometimes in the Sino-Japanese. It would be good practice.
Pay more attention to each other and just kind of spice it up.
Yeah. Maybe we could make it musical the way Thich Nhat Hanh does.
Well, I was just very interested in that. I didn't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know it?
No, I don't. I heard it when I was at Plum Village, but that was a long time ago, and I don't remember. But we could find out, I bet. Yeah. Oh, Samia.
Yeah. Michelle,
she
spent a lot of time at Plum Village.
Who did?
Michelle Merrill.
Really?
Yeah, she.
Huh. Oh. She and I have never talked about that. Interesting. Thank you.
There's Vietnamese temples here in San Jose.
Yes.
Here too.
Yes. We could go there and they would teach us.
And they probably sing in Vietnamese, though.
Yes, they probably do.
So the Thich Nhat Hanh one is in Vietnamese, not in Japanese?
Oh, it would be in Vietnamese.
Oh, it would be.
Yeah.
But it would be...
It would be the same.
The melody would be the same, but how would it fit into the words?
Well, we may have to work on it. Might be a really interesting project.
Vietnam is the only country with both the northern and southern schools of Buddhism.
Yes.
Theravadan, which Thich Nhat Hanh is, I think.
Well, he's Zen, too.
Oh, he's Zen.
Oh, yeah. He's a mix. Yeah.
Did you mention Sino-Japanese?
Yeah, it's Chinese-Japanese. Japanese people can't read it. Mm. The characters are old, and so it doesn't really make sense to them. And when you translate this, I have a translation, a character-by-character translation somewhere that shows what each one means. And I'll try to find that, because that's interesting, too. You can trace where the no's are. No this, no that, no other. Moo, moo, moo. And Prajnaparamita is...
Mm-hmm. Well, some of the characters are pretty common. I mean, they're not unusual.
Oh, I know.
The pronunciation is
classical.
It might be what they call a classical Japanese.
I don't know.
Which was more like the sound of Chinese, the modern.
Yes.
Modern Japanese is.
I can't understand anything.
Or like, you know. Mu is
in
Chinese.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You see a lot of mu's and.
Mm-hmm.
And then the names are. Transliterations of Sanskrit.
Yes, yes. So, of course, it's not clear. And it doesn't really matter. You know, you don't have to understand it.
Work that somebody gave me, and it's got a Chinese transliteration next to any character, which is called Lopamoko or Huyen Zhuhao, which is their little phonetic alphabet that they teach in Taiwan, but not mainland China. So that shows you how it sounds if you can't remember the word.
Japanese spoken with
a
Chinese accent.
Well, nobody talks that. Tang Dynasty, whenever they started bringing these things over, and scholars would run all these Chinese classics and book and whatnot. So they had
think of an old
classical Japanese
Bible or Book of Psalms. A 1,000 years old or 700 years old, but been written in Middle English, which is more French really than English.
Yes.
If you ever read Chaucer, can't understand it today. You know, if we're written in Old English, it's much more almost like German. Can't read it now.
Well, it's after 8:00.